Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. Hey, I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, you're going to have to strap yourselves in for some movies, video games, comic books, TV talk. It's really pop culture. And this time we're talking about a special podcast that is new to podcast feeds as of a few months ago, but it's been out. And maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't. We're going to have the creators right here on the show, along with one of the stars. I don't know if y'all are watching Our Flag Means Death. It's one of my favorite shows on TV. I think it's beautiful. It's hilarious. It's all-inclusive. And as a pirate show, you know I have high standards because my favorite video game franchise, LucasArts Monkey Island. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You want to do pirates in comedy? I got a pretty high bar there. And it started when I was like, what, 12, and those games started coming out on like PC. But Our Flag Means Death is fantastic. And we have one of the stars right here to talk about their involvement in Outer Space, which is what we're going to be talking about, among other things. We can't get away from the fact that your host right here is going to be moderating a panel of some of the people who directed, were involved in the wonderful, nostalgic movie, Homeward Bound. Yeah, that's getting a 30th anniversary. That's how old we are. If you remember Homeward Bound, we're playing it up here at the El Capitan here in Hollywood, and I'll be moderating a panel with some of the people involved in making that film, including my good friend Benj, who was in the movie, and he's on this show as well. And we'll be talking about Outer Space, which he's one of the co-creators of. There's lots to get to, so I'm just going to start you off. Let's get to it. All right, Geekscapists, let's get right to it. So I want to give you a little bit of backstory on how I know my good friend Benj Thal. Geekscape might as well be Jockscape. Y'all know that I do these like runs and run in the hills, the ultra runs, and I run with a group at the Hollywood Bowl, and we do these exercise things. One of the people I met through that free fitness group, I've known him for, I'd say, 6 years, is my good friend Benj Thal. And Benj comes up to me one day, and he's an editor. He does all sorts of stuff, but he's also a writer and creator. He's mainly writer and creator, and he's got all these properties. And then people started whispering in our friends group, and goes, you know, Benj was the little kid in Homeward Bound. You remember Homeward Bound? And I was like, no, I was too busy playing Monkey Island in the early 90s. But of course I know that Homeward Bound movie with the animals, and then Michael J. Fox voicing a dog, and we've got Sally Field as a cat. The guy from Cocoon is in it. And of course, Benj Thal is the kid. And as I started thinking about it and seeing Benj, I was like, oh, that is the kid from Homeward Bound. And he's a writer, editor, director. He's a multi-hyphenate, and he's here on Geekscape right now. Benj, finally, after listening to so many Geekscapes, here you are in Geekscape.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, watching the opening there, I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen it live. You know, we got pirates, we got space, we got all the stuff we're going to talk about.
That pretty much covers Geekscape. Like, as I've said on the show before, and you all listening, about a mile wide and inch deep when it comes to Jonathan's topics. Like, I know a lot of stuff, but very little about each and everything, right? Like, it's, you know, I can talk to people about almost anything. They should be doing the heavy lifting when it comes to that. And you're doing the heavy lifting here. I first met you as my friend, and then I knew you as the little kid in Homeward Bound. And Benj, I feel like we're going to go full circle as both friends and the little boy from Homeward Bound. I don't know where I'm going with this sentence. This Saturday at El Capitan, you asked me to moderate this panel with some of the people from the movie. Let's real quick just say who's going to be there, because I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be this Saturday at the El Capitan 7 o'clock show. We've got the film is going to go up on screens the first time since 1993 in the same theater where it premiered originally. The director, Dwayne Dunham, is going to be on board. Producer Jeffrey Chernoff is going to be out. Robert Hayes, who, if you know, is the star of Airplane, Striker.
Then I'm in. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
He played the dad in the film, and Veronica Lauren Sawyer, who played my sister Hope, as well as Kevin Chevalier, is going to be there. He played young Jamie. So the whole family is sort of reuniting for the first time since I think when we made the second movie, probably in 1996, last time I've seen any of these folks.
I heard that you were bringing a Ouija board so we could talk to the pets. Can we talk to the dogs, animals? Is there any chance of that?
Talk to the cat. You can talk to the cat.
Okay. That's awful. I'm about to lose my moderating gig here. Be like, what are you doing? No, we're not having a pet seance to talk to the animals from home. You know what? That's a different show. Maybe we do that on Geekscape, where we try and channel the animals from the movie. I mean, listen, they were your friends for the summer of 92, 91 when you were filming that movie. I can't be insensitive. Yeah. We're not digging up, but we're not doing no pet cemetery on this show. Well, not again. But listen,
you know, I have a dog now, so it's okay. You know,
okay.
I'm over the dogs.
Okay. So what if I knew how we could do a little pet cemetery and get the animals there for this Saturday? Would you be into that? What could go wrong with a little pet cemetery?
You know, abandonment issues, maybe.
Let's get the kids. I actually
we'll be up on the panel. We'll be up on the panel, and all of a sudden, we'll hear a bark in the back of the theater.
Jonathan, did you go to that pet cemetery and do that thing we all told you not to do? Don Amici, no, he's not in pet cemetery, but he feels like he would be in pet cemetery. That was actually
Don Amici was the voice of Shadow.
Yeah, but he was not in pet cemetery. That was the older actor who was in the Munsters. I'm not going to get it. But Geekscape, feel free to yell at me and be like, you lose all the nerd cred. Okay. Your co-creator on this podcast, we're going to talk about the Otter Space. Let's bring him in here. Maybe he can talk more than me so that I'm not saying stupid shit. Andy Levine here.
You're doing pretty well there, Jonathan.
He's here. And he co-created this script with you for the Otters in Outer Space thing, and we'll talk about where that idea came from. But then when it came time to inhabit these things and bring them to life, to give them voice, we have our good friend Samba. I'm going for it. Shkute.
Oh, more
phlegm. Oh, there's more, right?
More phlegm. It's more phlegm.
Okay, here we go. Samba was born in the Saharan Desert. And, like, I don't know. That's just a fact that it's like, hey, this kid from Texas, he's not going to get this, but I'm going to try. Samba Shkute.
Better. Yes.
I got to get some phlegm. No, you're just letting me off the hook. That's
no, sucks. It's Dutch. It's Dutch enough. It sounds Dutch enough to me.
Okay, so that's not the Mauritanian side.
Samba Dutch is the Mauritanian name, and Schutte is the Dutch name. So half Dutch, half Mauritanian.
Okay. All right, yeah. Let's go with that. And Andrew, let me pronounce your last name. Okay. I'm kidding. I live in L.A. I can say Levine. Levine. Get the heck out of here. Benjamin Tikal, tell him to lay off. All right, that's enough silly gags from me. Tell me about this Otter Space thing, because the first time I heard about it was Benj saying, hey, you know podcasts. I wouldn't go that far. I would just say that I've been doing it since 2005, but that doesn't make me an expert. It just makes me someone who doesn't have anything else to do.
Was the iPod even out in 2005, or were you just doing it before?
I was just putting WAV files on the internet. No. Well, the video iPod was actually out. It was crazy. I remember driving to LA in 2003 and having my iPod, my 40 gig iPod brick full of songs. And then the video iPod came out, and that's what we would do. We'd do video podcasts and put them up there. And you little suckers listening to this would suck them down and watch them. And I was doing video until, like, I think 2010. And people were like, dude, nobody does video podcasts anymore unless it's on YouTube. And I was like, what, YouTube? That thing that only let you put 10 minutes up? And they're like, no. So, yes, I'm late on a lot of...
We're full circle back on video here now.
Yes, we're back on video. Tell me about Otter Space, because y'all started this project as screenwriters, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Correct. Correct. Andy, you want to...
Yeah, I'll let you go.
Samba, you tell us about it. These two guys.
I mean, Samba will talk about it. No. Andy and I are writers. You know, we've written a couple of scripts together and projects. And this was one that, you know, I think when it started, we were doing stuff in the kind of family horror space. And we wanted to write something for Andy's got a couple daughters, two daughters, and we were just kind of wanting to write, you know, like a Pixar style animated movie. And we went out and we were sort of like, well, what animal hasn't really kind of had their due in that universe? And of course,
armadillos, pretty popular. Armadillos. Oh, that right. You're right.
Sorry. Did y'all? I mean, I think Andy's being facetious, but like, were you trying? Like, did you think of armadillos as a Texan? That'd be cool, but
yeah,
you thought of armadillos, but you're like, not so cuddly.
Not
let's
so
do
cuddly.
Otters.
They're like rats, like made out of a tank shell or something. Right?
But otters are also playful, right? Like that. You got to have that in a kids' movie. You can't have somebody like, you know, rough with a shell in a kids' movie unless that's what it's about, I guess. So y'all write this thing, and then, I mean, Benj, you come out of live action, you work in live action, Samba, you work in live action, you all work in live action. Why animation? Is that something that like actually gets made unless you're an animator, unless you're a cartoonist? Like, you kind of have a kind of hard barrier entry facing you when you write an animated film, no?
Well, when we wrote it because this is what we were passionate about. This is what we wanted to write. So I mean, we didn't, you know, what that was, an animation wasn't something that was going to keep us back. This is how we wanted to write it. We couldn't do this live action, obviously, but this is what we wanted to write about. And we thought of otters, we thought of otter space. And from the title, we just kind of wrote it from there. We thought the title, just a lame dad joke, became like this awesome script. So
how did you add substance to the lame dad joke? Because I'm guessing, like, considering it's a feature length script, or, you know, full length podcast series, you can't just rely on like, hey, isn't that funny? Like,
yes.
What was kind of images, or what some of the sequence started coming to you that you fleshed the story around?
I mean, I think one of the first things that we thought of in looking at otters is that people know they hold hands when they go to sleep.
I didn't know that. No.
Well, you do now. Otters hold hands so they don't drift away while they're sleeping and drift out to sea. And
are you serious? Wow, that's amazing.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. So they sleep holding hands, and we thought, wow, this is like, okay, we've got a two-hander here. We've got two, you know, literally. And we thought that was one jumping point for the script. And the other was that otters are very playful. And so those were two things we decided we wanted to try and explore. And we kind of took that leap, like, well, okay, each otter, if they have hold hands with another, they have what we call as a paw buddy. So there's like a whole paw buddy system. And what happens when that system breaks down if somebody doesn't want to be your paw buddy? So that was like the sort of jumping point for the movie. And of course, how do we get them to outer space? So otters being playful, we thought, okay, we want to have these two characters, Cordy and Kip, who don't want to be paw buddies together.
They're like maybe the last ones picked for the team or something like that?
They're just,
yeah, we kind of thought they have two different styles of play.
Yeah.
So each otter, like Cordy is very freeform. She goes with the flow, and Kip is all about the rules. And so that's where we started our character development from the story, having these two otters that, you know, have different ideas of what the proper way to play is. And I think, you know, kids, adults even can get on with that concept.
What was it, always in space, or was this something that you were like, hey, Finding Nemo style, we can keep this in the ocean, we can say something about the natural world here on Earth, or, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of films, children's films, deal with the natural world here on Earth, right? And or was the pun just like too good to pass up as a dad, Andy?
Yeah, the pun was too good to pass up for sure. So we definitely wanted this to be a space thing. We're both sci-fi geeks. We love it. So I've always wanted to write sci-fi, and this was just a great opportunity to do it. It really worked for this story we wanted to tell, because we wanted to explore the different ways to play, and each way is valid. You know, if you want to play Monopoly, some people just like to jump in and play. Some people like to read the rules first and establish what the rules are, so there's not going to be fighting later. And they're both valid. And we thought, what if there's a society out there that doesn't play? It's kind of, they've lost the ability to play. They don't have play. So that's like an alien society. So that's, it works, you know, for the story we're telling thematically.
So there's like a sense of up when you think about the animated future in space. Yeah. Is what if there was a society that had lost some of the values that we share now? And what are some of the lessons that you can bring back in it about, well, I know they're otters, but what makes us human, what makes us social, what makes us bonded to each other. How did Samba get involved in this? Talk to me about that. You were like, hey, it was going to be water. He does water on the show. Maybe he'd be good.
Well, actually, Samba and I worked together a couple years ago on a project for National Geographic Kids. We did a pilot together. And we always wanted to work together again. And actually, you were, I think Samba was shooting the first season of Our Flag Means Death when we started. So I don't know who had him as a pirate first.
Is he a pirate in outer space?
He is a wannabe pirate.
A wannabe starfish who dreams of being a pirate.
And so you're a bit of the troublemaker in some of this, or you're like a band of pirates that these otters run afoul of?
No, Seastar is very much wants to be left alone, and these otters are always in his space, like in the ocean, in the waters, and he just wants to be done with otters. He hates otters. And so he finally finds a refuge where he can be at peace, and then all of a sudden they get abducted to space, and he's tagged along.
Oh, because otters mess with starfish, don't they?
Yeah.
Like in the natural world, like you see videos of otters messing with starfish.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're too playful for starfish. Starfish are meant to just be planted and live life in peace and solitude, and otters are not.
And so you were like, hey, listen, Benj hits you up and says, dude, I've been wanting to like work with you. We're going to try this script as a audio like example. We're going to put it out as a podcast, see what kind of audience we can put around it. This pirate show ain't going anywhere. Like, come on, man, you'll be back in LA in no time. Can you do this voice? Is that what the phone call went? He's like, this pirate thing, that's not gonna happen, dude. Like, come play a pirate, come play a starfish.
Yeah, right. Who's this, Taika Waititi?
He's like, who's this guy? No.
Who's this guy? No, yeah, like Ben said, we had met in 2013, I believe it was, and we did a pilot for Nat Geo Kids, and that was so much fun because I got to do a lot of voices for different characters, and we had stayed in touch since then. And then I met Andrew at one of Benj's, I think it was Darby's. Like, he does a thing, or he used to do a thing every year where, you know, it's the horse races and everyone wears a crazy hat. And I think that's where I met Andrew.
Oh, yeah. I don't think Benj has been doing that for the last 4 or 5 years. No, knowing him.
No.
I don't know what you're talking about. Benj, have you been having a
Derby,
party with
Derby?
Me?
I think it was Derby.
Derby, yeah. Derby.
Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky Derby.
You're not
there
supposed
we go.
To talk about the party I'm not invited to on my show.
I mean, last year was rude. Off the hook. It was.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah,
I think it was everyone from the Marvel Universe was there.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the invite must have been lost in the mail, John.
Yeah. I think all the people from the workout group are there, Jonathan.
No, I saw pictures on Facebook.
Did you check your spam folder?
Nah, I am the spam. Hey, if it wasn't for spam, I wouldn't get any email, right? So, yes, I checked the spam folder.
No, so I'd now known
Samba
Andrew,
had done. Samba had done a bunch of voices on the pilot. We did some animation in that pilot, and he did a bunch of character voices, and it was just a lot of fun. So it was an easy call to make.
I loved it. I love doing animation and then working with Benj. This was a perfect opportunity to do that and to play a starfish who wants to be a pirate. You know, that just fit perfectly.
Now, y'all are all three writers. Samba, you came up through comedy. You were doing stand up. You're writing things. You're filming sketches. You're filmmaking. Benj, mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with him. He does a lot of the same stuff. He makes projects. He makes proof of concepts. If he needs to film them. He'll cut them up. He does it. Andy, I'm guessing, is cut from the same cloth as Benj's partner. How was the collaboration? Like, you two guys are writers and you've written this script. And when you bring somebody creative like Samba on, like, what do you invite? Like, what's the kind of conditions for saying, like, especially in VO or animation, like, how strict were y'all with the ideas?
Not very. Because, I mean, we have someone who's just, we had all of our actors, but especially someone like Samba, who's just a funny person, you know, just so funny. You let them, we did a table read and we just let them improv and go off. And most of the time they're funnier than we are. Let's be frank. Let's be real.
I talked to Ben Begley earlier and he said, those two jerks wouldn't let me do anything.
Well, that's Ben.
Ben can't let Ben do anything.
I literally texted Ben earlier and said, hey man, you want to drop in as a surprise? And he goes, Man, it's a no. Like, I can't with those two guys. They didn't. I wanted to add an accent, and I was like, nah, I'm kidding. I'm being facetious. Ben was not able to. His wife is in the series, too. Let's talk about some of the people who you got to be in the series, Ben. How many of the Nat Geo people did you blackmail into being in this thing? I'm kidding.
None, actually. Actually, no, that's not true. Rick Adams. Very true. Rick Adams is someone I met all the way back when we were doing National Geographic stuff, and he plays Bo, the British-sounding alien that our two otters meet. They meet two aliens in space. Rick and I have worked together in a bunch of writing stuff. He's a really creative guy. He's an amazing voiceover artist and also a television personality. And so he jumped on board to do it. We've got Renee Dorian, who also produced with Andy and I and helped gather the cast. She's Ben Begley's wife. Ben Begley did a role in it. Renee plays Cordy, the main otter. And another actor, Casey Adler, who Andy and I have worked with in volunteer work with Young Storytellers, came and did Kip. We got, through Renee, we got Carlos Elizraki. Did I say that right, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely.
More flow.
Did I need a...
All different Latino
here. So Carlos is awesome. Carlos is the voice of Rocco for Rocco's Modern Life from Nickelodeon TV shows. And he's awesome. He played a villain. And then we also got another actor from that I worked with on a short film many years ago who's in the show. He's in
Young Sheldon.
Benj, what happened to you happens to be on every... Geeks
does it
little, I know this. No, you don't. You watch it like that, whatever thought that was, it's like flies away and you beyond arm's length. You're like, somebody help me out in the chat.
Yeah, somebody help me out in the chat.
Yeah. And so did y'all just throw one of those parties I wasn't invited to, pull out the microphones and record this thing? What was the process of recording this thing? Because we've talked about doing narrative podcasts here on the network for a while, and they just seem pretty laborious. They sound like a lot of work. When y'all made the decision to take this feature script, turn it into podcast episodes, was this something that forced a reformatting of the story? Like, what was that process, Andy, of taking something that was supposed to be, let's say, a 100-page script and cutting it into bite-sized episodes and then recording it with a cast that's this size, which is a pretty big cast?
Well, I mean, cast-wise, you know, this was during the pandemic, so this was something that we recorded pretty much separately in our own places, you know, including our narrator who you know, does the most speaking arguably in the whole thing, and played by Jennifer Riker, who for fans of Black Lightning, she was Dr. Awesome. Helga Jace. She was Dr. Helga Jace for two seasons.
You know, that's cool. On the CW show or?
Yeah, on the CW show. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so she had two seasons as like a really bad, you know, baddie. So yeah, she was in Atlanta recording most of this. So yeah, having everyone separately was kind of an interesting way to do this, but it worked out since we're doing recordings. I mean, look at us, we're doing this podcast and we're all in different locations.
I just don't like to shower.
Yeah, I don't like to shower either.
I used to do this stuff in person and there are too many complaints.
Absolutely.
Oh, pandemic? I'm kidding, that's insensitive. Yeah, no, then, this is way easier. Yeah.
And then screenplay-wise, you know, we had a feature-length screenplay and Benj and I decided that we're going to do this in 10 episodes and we just found natural breaks because when you write, you know, you write just not only in scenes, but in sequences. And there's certain sequences where, like, if people remember DVDs, how they were just kind of chapter breaks, those are basically sequences. And we found like the 10 chapter breaks and it basically broke the script up into 15-minute increments. So our episodes are about that length.
How long have y'all been working together as collaborators, as screenwriters?
Benj and I have known each other for 20 plus years. Yeah. Wow. 25 years we've known each other.
How'd y'all meet?
But I think we started working seriously together about 7-8 years ago.
Yeah, I think we all started working seriously 7-8 years ago, man.
Come on.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what I was
you just got to get clear of your 20s, and then you're like, oh, I guess I better get it together. I'm out of my 30s now. I better make that plan my parents asked me about. When did y'all, like, Ben, you grew up here in LA or wherever those pets got away and went on that homeward bound journey. You grew up here, right, brother?
I grew up here. Yeah, I grew up in Thousand Oaks. I was born in New York. So okay. I lived there till I was like 8 or 9 years old.
And Andy, you're local as well?
No, yeah, but I'm out of Arizona.
Okay, but y'all met like college? What,
in college.
What
are we talking college.
About here? Yeah. Okay. And then y'all are just collaborating already in college and you just kind of kept it
we
going.
Did. That's we did write a short screenplay in college together for a short film that never got made. And Ben, do you want to talk about that?
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, we had it's very comic related. We had written and developed a short film to be done in college based on Neil Gaiman's short film or based on Neil Gaiman's short story.
Uh-huh.
And we were about to do it in college. And then when we got out of college, the rights became very expensive. So we weren't able to make that. But
Neil Gaiman met us. Yeah. He was on board. He read it. He gave us notes. Yeah.
Wait, amazing. Get out of here.
It was a really great experience to develop it in some way. But, yeah. You know, it just kind of, you know, we weren't able to afford it at, you know, 22 years old. And
no.
You know.
Andy, that last bit that you said.
Yes.
Are you being silly?
That's real. No, I'm not.
Because I was about to say, like, Neil Gaiman seems like the kind of person that, like, a real heartfelt letter might convince him to be like, yo, let's do this. Like, let's give it a shot.
Benj is all heart, man. He's all the king of heartfelt.
So. Well, I know that. Well,
Neil was awesome. Neil looked at our script and was, I think this was, you know, 20 years ago, and he gave us some really good feedback and said, go with it. And, you know, we're going to do it as a student film where, you know, it wouldn't be, there's no financial incentive involved. So we weren't able, you know, when we graduated, we weren't able to continue that process, but, you know, it was great to get that, you know,
endorsement. From endorsement, like, one of the greatest writers, like, working.
I mean, I grew up reading the Sandman comics, so it's Neil is a huge. I've read almost everything he's done, and for him to just read a few pages that we wrote for a short film was like amazing. But yeah, so maybe someday some compilation film of his short stories. You know, give us a call.
I've known you for not as long as Andy's known you, but that story is fantastic. And
yeah, Neil was great. You know what?
You've never told me that story. It's fantastic.
Well, I met Neil at Comic-Con like 23 years ago, just in a signing line, I think, you know, and just, you know, chatted him up briefly. You get that few seconds. This was at Comic-Con before Marvel was there before.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, when it was just a warehouse with a bunch of people with comic book boxes. And I think that was like right when he was doing the Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
Right around that era,
because they added to that film, like the U.S. release of Princess Mononoke has an additional couple sequence or two or pieces that Neil wrote.
Yeah, he wrote the
there's a little bit of an Americanization for it, and it's awesome. And yeah, that would have been late 90s.
Yeah,
probably. That's fantastic. And you just went right up to him and like, hey man, this is awesome.
It took a few months. I wrote a letter. I got a postcard back.
That's so cool.
On my wall somewhere.
That's a great story, man. And I guess that's what you tell your friends when they come over to that party I'm not invited to, because that's a really cool. Does Neil go to the damn
party? Neil was at the party. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He always wins the hat contest. He always has the silliest hat.
He always wins.
Yeah.
Is it because I don't do drugs? Is that what it is? I don't. Is it because I don't?
It's because you didn't know. It's because you didn't know otters hold hands together.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really.
Is that what y'all do at this party? Oh, that's a secret. Yeah. No. I love that. Heidi and I are gonna go over to your party. It's like, you know, they're swinging, right? And I'm like, what?
What?
No. That's not my hand, Jonathan. Put this on and stand in the corner. What? No. I'm gonna break a leg if I climb into that contraption. I'm not limber enough to go to your parties. That's what it takes. Speaking of like swinging from ropes and stuff, you're in this pirate show, Samba. Y'all just filmed the second season. I gotta tell you, I wasn't lying what I said in the intro. I honestly had a little bit of hostility. I think everything Taika touches is gold. I love everything he touches.
Awesome.
Obviously, the vampire stuff from the movie to the show. And, you know, I think Boy, Hunt for the Wilder People, those are just beautiful films. And then I see these previews. And I love all the guys from What We Do in the Shadows. And, of course, you know, the comedy series and the musical comedy series and Flight of the Conchords. But when I see this pirate show, something in me, and Geekscape us know this from the beginning, is like, that should be a Monkey Island show. Are y'all familiar with the Monkey Island video games that LucasArts did like years ago? And there's a new one that came out this past year.
The only reason I'm aware of it is because when the first teaser came out for Our Flag Means Death, everyone was going on about Monkey Island and like, oh, this is like Monkey Island. It's about, you know, oh, there, you can never take Monkey Island away from me. And Our Flag Means Death is never going to replace, you know, our love for pirates and compared to Monkey Island. And then that's I was like, what the heck is Monkey Island?
Saba, where were those damn nerds when Disney was making those pirates movies?
I don't know.
Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of similar DNA between those pirates movies and some of the set pieces of Monkey Island. You know, where were they when Chris Farley was, or Chris Elliott was making Cabin Boy? The truth is, I think that there's room for both. And I honestly, and I'm not being facetious, I'm a hardcore, there's a shelf over here that's covered in Monkey Island stuff. I have Monkey Island stuff all over this office. And there's not a lot of merch made because it's not Mario, right?
It was a CD-ROM game in 1995, right?
Right. And so I'm watching this, but I have to watch what Taika does. I have to, because I think he's incredible. He's incredible. So Heidi and I are just picking out what the next show is we're going to watch. We've all caught up on the vampires, and we're like, let's watch Our Flag Means Death. Let's go for it. And she loves Reese Darby's. Like, she loves the whole Flight of the Conchords crew. I start watching this show. It becomes my favorite show very quickly. And there's room for it with Monkey Island is fun. It's silly. It's really playful. And I think Andy would love it because it has a lot of word humor, has a lot of silly humor like that. And the universe is pop culture, kind of like it references pop culture in the real world in a lot of ways. Our Flag Means Death is different. It's inclusive, which I think is incredible. I think the stuff that they do for representation on that show and inclusivity on that show and the guts they take with those relationships on that show, I think you don't have to be marked or pronounce yourself as a progressive show. Like, because sometimes that becomes the thing. Like, now you're the progressive show. No, y'all are the pirate comedy with progressive themes that I think are handled fantastically. And none of the jokes, none of the characters stop in order to put a message across or a story across. They're just beautifully woven. And it makes me hate Taika more. Because, like, how the hell do all of you talented bastards make such a beautiful show? It's a beautiful show. As much as it's a funny show.
Yeah, no, listen. Like Monkey Island, Our Flag Means Death, they can coexist. They can coexist, you know. I like love them both. They can be otter hands. They can be paw buddies. But no, it is one of those shows where the people just exist in this world, and we don't question, you know, their choices or anything like that. It's like, no, or their labels. It's just, that's what I loved about it. The writer creator David Jenkins, he just had a clear vision about, I don't want to make a show about trauma. I don't want to make a show about, you know, coming out. I don't want to show, just, these are people who are just trying to find family, trying to find out who they are. And then some of them fall in love, which, you know, would happen on pirate ships. You're together at sea for months on end without anything to do. So I really like appreciated that's the direction they were going in. And of course it was like with comedy legends that I've always wanted to work with. I mean, you know, Reese Darby, Taika Waititi, and then all these guest stars that would come in, Fred Armisen, Leslie Jones, Will Arnett, you know what I'm saying?
Keep coming. Every episode's the hits keep coming.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Oh, thank you, man. It was a lot of fun to do. Like a lot of laughing. And that was season one, which we shot last year. And we shot in 2021. I'm so turned around. No, we just finished filming season two.
You're filming on the other side of the planet too.
I just got back from New Zealand, so I'm a bit disoriented. Yeah,
it took me 15 days to recover from going to Thailand for our honeymoon over the New Year. And
I was there for 4 months. So I came back with an accent. It was really weird. Anyway, so I'm back in LA now. But no, it was a lot of fun for shooting season two again with the same people and just getting back together again. It's like you become family, you know.
And you come back and like people have to remind you to put more phlegm into it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my name is Samba Sheet. Like,
and while you're down there, they're obviously filming other projects with the Concord boys and this and that. Do they ask you to come on some of the other projects and do little cameos? Because it just feels like y'all are in a club now. And the club goes on tour. The club does all these fun things. Are you in the club?
It's amazing. I'm friends with the club. I'm a member.
Oh, you're in the
club. I'm a member of the club, but I'm not like, I didn't get to work on Time Bandits, if that's what you're asking. They were filming Time Bandits there with Jermaine Clement and some of the other people there. But that was in another city completely. It was in Wellington. And our schedule was like Auckland, and it was like San Francisco, LA. That's how big the distance was. And it was just not
the entirety of New Zealand.
the North Island.
Are they still filming the Time Bandits? Because like you can get back.
Yeah, but you know,
play the dude with like the giant. Remember that giant cow skull on his head? Play that guy. You can go back and do
that's a hat. Bandits. That's a hat I wore at one of Benj's parties. It was awesome. Yeah. Anyway,
yo, you guys are doing some Eyes Wide Shut crap over your parties, man. I don't know if I'm going to this. Like, I'm not going to your party. Somebody,
no. The invites were already out. You don't have it.
I'm the person who will end up dead at your party. Like, he's not breathing. Shh, hurry up, put him in the alley. Who here's got a car? Like, you guys are. Yeah, I know how your party's going to end up. Hey, Jonathan, try this. What is it? I don't know. Feed me Drano. When y'all are doing this, Our Flag Means Death stuff, Samba. Mm. And
yeah,
again, I'm not just saying this though because you're here. Because Geekscape is your little code. When someone comes on Geekscape and I've seen their stuff that they're promoting, and you'll know when I say, oh, I found this challenging. Yeah, let's talk more about it. But no, I profoundly love this show and can't wait for season two. Awesome. When y'all are just talking about these characters, being honest and being true to themselves, but also being just misfits and outcasts, and like mm-hmm. you said, not having a home. And I find a lot of the parallels and stuff that like James Gunn did in a lot of his stuff, because you both write about outcasts and the stories. When you hit up against something, is there any talk of, oh, we can't do that? Or do y'all just say, you know what? Let's lean into
like,
that.
Like stunts wise or actually like story wise
ideas, the stories. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's such a world. It's such a like fantasy world. Like pirates have been around forever, and there's been so many different shows done. Like, you know, Assassin's Creed has done Black Flags, and then there was Black Sails and mm-hmm. Pirates of the Caribbean. So it's just such an open world that a lot of people fantasize about. It was like one of the most liberal times, like in society. There were no rules. In fact, pirates had their own codes of conduct as well. Like, you know, there were official marriage ceremonies that you could have on board called metelotage. You had the Republic of not the Republic of Pirates. We call it the Republic of Pirates in our show, but it was actually Nassau, which was the island where they had a democracy with pirates and all this
sure.
kind of stuff.
They just probably like had a court and stuff like that.
And if someone is like, if the crew wants to mutiny against their captain, there's a little trial that happens. You know, it's like it was very organized criminal activity at a time where everyone could be liberal. And so that's what's so fascinating about this time period is that there's no rules. Like everyone could create their own world as they wanted it to be. And so I think with this show, and especially what we're doing in season two, there's less rules that we want to adhere to. And you'll see that back. It's not trying to be whatever the word is, progressive or woke, I heard being thrown around. It's none of that. It's just about what would these people do if they were stuck at sea and really wanted to find their home, be in love, be the best version of themselves that they could be in a world where there were no rules, without giving it any kind of specific labels. And that's what we're trying to do.
I think that's what's so great about the show is that it's about positive. It's a positive show. It's not people being mean to each other. Like there's a lot of nihilism on TV, and there's a lot of nihilism in fandom where it's like, there's a lot of edgy stuff, a lot of dark stuff. And what I love about the show, and I think like Ted Lasso is another example of this.
It's Ted Lasso at sea, someone called it.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you what, when I was writing a pilot over the summer, the two scripts, plus another show similar to Ted Lasso, of course, is Scrubs. Matt Kelly, who runs our network, gave me Scrubs as a pilot. That was a good suggestion. I said, yeah, I want to write something about people being nice and still feeling shortcomings and still feeling like, hey, like, how do we get through this? Even though we're doing everything right and true to ourselves. And again, I can't wait for season two to come along. Awesome. And
it'll be a nice positive boost.
Yeah,
do you guys have a date?
Yeah, you have a date for the season two?
Nothing's been announced yet. No, we just finished filming in December, so they're in post-production now. So I'm assuming, you know, it'll be a few months before we hear, oh, here's a teaser. It's dropping whenever they announce it. So hopefully summer, like before summertime.
I think the premiere is going to be at Benj's.
Yeah, I think I was going to say, yeah. Benj, do you got to call the caterer in advance for like the weird stuff? Do y'all have anything with tentacles?
Actually, I mean, I think Samba's going to bake something maybe, right?
Yeah. Yep. I'm gonna. Actually, I do Samba, all the baking.
Is
there more baking? Is there any special baking in the?
So this is a thing that just like went nuts. Like with season one, is that there was an orange cake that was featured or talked about in one of the episodes. And so for Easter last year, I had baked that orange cake. It's called a 40 orange cake, and I posted the photo and recipe online, and the fans ate it up. And more than 1,500 versions of this cake have been baked, and they all tag me in these photos. Holy so I've crow. Like had to retweet and share all these photos. So it went viral. So everyone's asking me like, what are we baking season two? I don't want to give it away, but I am saying that there's a couple of things that you can look forward to.
When's the book coming out of these recipes? Because they do that for all the shows, right? Like if prominent recipes are featured on the show, don't they just end up becoming like
right? Because you want to know how you eat jerk. Shark,
right? But like, shark meat. But like, don't people do like the version of it? Don't people do like the funny version of this stuff?
Well, like the piracy cuisine, right? You know, the pirate cuisine. I mean, just no starfish.
Yeah,
just no starfish, no otters.
Yeah, you don't have to be a poacher to make this stuff. I think. Well, I think I'm being honest. I actually think that'd be a fun idea to do. Like, you know, obviously you have to have substitutes, but having fun substitutes for some of these things and having Our Flag Means Death.
Instead of grog, which is sea salt with water that you drink, you, I don't know,
find something else. I mean, trust me, like some of these
Himalayan salt and
the video gamers are like, I'd drink that. Some of the stuff these guys drink on some of their like marathon Twitch sessions, like they wish they'd be streaming.
Right.
I mean, they're like downing the, what is it, the Monster Energy drinks and stuff like that. Who knows what they're putting in that stuff? But there comes a lawsuit. think about it. Talk to the people in charge. Make a cookbook.
A nice pirate-themed cookbook from Our Flag.
A pirate-themed cookbook. Maybe like consult with some people about would this actually work as a dish with some of these alternatives to things that would be legally procured.
I think that pirates had to be health conscious. I think they had to be health conscious. If I remember, like the episode where you guys did the
scurvy.
40, it was scurvy, right? You guys. Yeah. That was a common problem with being at sea. You didn't have.
You're out of oranges. You're out of oranges. You're out of vitamin C. You lose your teeth. And your nails. So yeah, that's actually happened.
In the research Samba, I was looking at your IMDb and another name came up that's very comic book oriented, and maybe Geekscape is, this creator's not in the forefront of your thoughts, but he definitely was for me around 2000 2001 2002, because he created the Red Star. Christian Gossett. I've been on a show with Christian Gossett, and you did a short film with Christian.
Oh right, yeah, we did a short film during the pandemic.
Did you his geek origins with the Red Star? Because it was the big indie book from Image coming like in 2000, 2001, 2002. And everybody talked about like the Red Star getting adapted to a film, this and that. God. And like Christian's table at like conventions were swarmed.
Oh, that's amazing. And I just knew he was an amazing animator and like an illustrator. And he had this lovely concept for this. He wanted to direct this film that was written by my friend, Chris McGann. And it was during the pandemic and about lockdown. And yeah, it was just fun to work with him. And then I only found out later that he was doing all these things. So
yeah,
world.
Yeah, he does effects and this and that. I ran into him when I used to do a comic book show, and I don't know what ended up happening with this project. There was a Star Trek fan film, and then like obviously Viacom Paramount came in and were like, hey, don't make that. So they had to like change the name of the fan film into something that was like, oh, this isn't Star Trek, it's just like Star Trek. And he was going to direct it, but he didn't. I think there was some drama over on that end, but I know that's how I met Chris. Wow. No way he would name me. I mean, he wouldn't recognize me from Adam. But huge respect for Christian Gossett. And of course, I was a Red Star fan back in the day. And so when I saw that you were involved in that project, is that short done, or is it something that like has a bunch of effects
with the
animation?
They just finished, I think, I think they're submitting it to some different festivals. And it's like, it's called I Love Kaiju. And
yeah.
It's about two people who meet online, who have their first date online during the pandemic. And then the pandemic is not really a virus. It's there's a giant Godzilla monster stomping around Los Angeles. And so you just have to be careful when you go out because you never know where she
could be. I don't want to spoil it, and Geekscape, so obviously we'll promote that when it comes out. It'd be cool to have Christian on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, my gosh.
That'd be a blast. But guys, let's talk about this Outer Space again. And Geekscapists who are listening to this, obviously you know how to work a podcast because it's in your ears right now. Use whatever podcatcher you're on right now to go and look for Outer Space. What do you think the audience is for it? And this has been out in the pod sphere for like a couple months now, guys. How's the reaction been? And I think, Benj, the strategy was the script is here. There's a barrier of entry. And obviously it's very expensive to animation. Let's try it as a podcast. See who's into it, where it goes. A couple months, you know, remember we were sitting down at coffee talking about it. Yeah, what's been the feedback? How are y'all feeling about this project?
I mean, it just keeps growing and getting more and more listeners. We're really excited that, like, you know, kids are finding it, and kids are finding it in an organic way. Like,
are you advertising on Roblox? Is that what's going on here?
That's a good idea, Andy. Let's get on that. Nice. We haven't done too much advertising. We've done some social pushes from ourselves, and we've experimented a little bit, but, you know, we just wanted to get it out there into ears and see what would happen. And the response so far has been great. Like there have been a couple kids that Andy's run into it at his daughter's school, like listen to it on repeat, you know, which are like, great.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to the whole thing, what's the runtime on the entire thing? Like if there's a person listening right now, they got kids, they're going to check out the Outer Space. Like the investment is what, like an hour and a half, 2 hours?
It's the full program's about 2.5 hours.
Perfect.
Each episode's 10 to 15 minutes. The first episode's a little longer to get you into the story.
But it's a ride to school if a parent wants to throw this on there.
Absolutely. That's what this is perfect for. It's for ride to school, or just if you know your kids are going to bed, or if they just need some non-screen time entertainment. This is perfect for that. And, you know, there's not a ton of kids content out there in the podosphere, whatever.
I blew it on this show, definitely.
And there, three words. You know, there's not a lot of narrative stuff that's really good. And so when, you know, I come from an editing background, I do movie trailers and I do movies and I edit and do sound design. So for us to put this thing together, it was kind of a no-brainer. We just decided, like, well, we can make this thing, and we got everybody to record and put this thing together in a couple months. And now having a full sound, we have these wonderful composers, Samantha Vandersleuth and Riley Hughes, who did our all original score. So you get an original score with it. You're getting all the talent that's on board. I forgot to mention one of our big baddie in the program is Lance Barber, who's on Young Sheldon. And he's an actor that I've worked with before on a short film that I directed. And he came and was our big, you know, he's the big bad guy in the program, but he's not very big.
he just has to sound big.
He just has to sound big. But, you know, everybody came
in. Dude? I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, can I just call you up and be like, yo, let's see how you like it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think I do a few voices in Outer Space if you listen carefully.
It's like your party. Like you invited everybody to be a part of it, but me.
You know, maybe if there's a sequel, we'll see if we can get you to play an otter. No, you know, but you Ben Begley is gonna might be available. So you know.
Yeah, no, you want Ben. I love Ben.
I'll say this too about Ben. the audience. While it's intended for children, we wrote it so that adults would love it too, especially adults who are geeks. I mean, there's a lot of sci-fi references in here. I mean, off the cuff. I mean, I think there's a reference to SETI Alpha 5. So if you're a Star Trek fan, you know what that is. But things like that are popping up there that'll make like the adults be like, "Oh, that's a joke for me," and my kid's not going to get it. Because when I'm watching stuff with my kids or listening to something with my kids, I want to be interested in it too, so we can bond and relate and talk about it, you know, afterwards. And this is for the sci-fi parent. This is like a primer for get your kids like into sci-fi. You know, they can listen to this, and then you can bring them into Star Wars and Star Trek and Back to the Future and all the awesome stuff.
It's all cool now. Like my godson's mother's hit me up one Christmas, and the kid was like still 4, 5, or 6, and they're like, "Hey, Jonathan, we know what Godzilla is, but he wants a Gamera for Christmas." Oh, it was like one of the proudest moments of my entire life, knowing that like I was his main male influence in his life, and that he wanted like a deep cut like Gamera.
Nice.
Like, whoa.
Not even Mothra.
No, I pulled the car over and just started crying. I was like, this is the proudest moment of my life. This is amazing. I've socially stunted this child at five to a place that I didn't achieve until college. you pull up.
No, but it's been fun to hear some feedback, like from what we shared, like on Twitter and Instagram, just some people who've checked out the podcast who have kids, and you could tell that both the parents and the children both enjoyed it, listening to it. They're telling us that their kids were really using their imagination, and that it just helped them like start to draw some of the things that they would hear.
Oh, and, that'd be amazing.
And yeah, and that the parents themselves were like really enjoying it and listening to it over and over again. So like Andrew says, it's amazing that, you know, yeah, you target children, but at the same time, because of these little nuggets that are sprinkled all over, it's like, yeah, parents can enjoy it too, for sure.
Do you all share the fan art? Like, is that something y'all could do? Like a fan art, maybe not a
fan art Friday.
Well, you don't want to set kids against each other. Like, you don't want to do like a fan art competition. But
yeah, we do.
I mean,
but obviously on Instagram, you can showcase some of these future artists. And
we have done that, and there's more to come. You know, we're replete with content, so we do have a fan art Friday hashtag that we do use and have used. So
people just take my face and put it on posters to embarrass me. It's not good, but. With this kind of response, any chance that the circle closes and we find ourselves back in a visually narrative sort of format, like a cartoon series or a film? Like, is that something that this podcast has started maybe generate?
That's the hope.
That's, yeah.
Just get one of these kids to like draw it. They're already drawing it for free.
Yeah.
Just, y'all heard of this AI thing?
Yeah, we can just get the AI to animate it, load it in.
Yeah, just like take some of these kids' drawings and like load it in and be like, here's the script. Give us one of these.
I mean, we had a lot of interest from, you know, studios and stuff on our original script. And, you know, we hit that barrier that a lot of people hit. It's not IP. It's not based on something. And we actually considered maybe make it a comic. Should we make it a graphic novel? Should we put it as a book? And just with the resources we had, and we wanted to get it as quickly to people as possible, and sort of as a test run, this podcast became something that, you know, as a showreel, like you said, like we could give it to someone and maybe do a test from just the audio that we have and see how it works with animation. Animation takes a lot of time, but that's changing now. You know, there's mocap animation, there's studios that are doing, you know, AI animation, like you said, there's that option. But
we talked about it last week on the show, Geekscape. Tom Merritt and I talked about the AI and the
data. Is there a chat GPT of animation where we can say like, hey, animate my movie, here's the script.
Come back in a few years and kill humanity.
But I think in creating it though, I think we tried to hit some of the same points you would hit in a animated film, and the feels and the moments and to give it space. It's not wall to wall talking. And so we tried to make it have a sense where, you know, you'd have these visuals that you could imagine. And I think for me creating it, that was that next step to an animated film wouldn't be so difficult. When you do an animated film, that's the process anyway. You record either your main actors or you record temp actors, and you record a sound bed and then storyboard from that, and then you make fixes. So in a sense, we kind of have that. We're past the starting line. So if there's any studios out there that are interested in Otters, we've got a tail, you know. I think Sambo will come back to BC Star.
Well, and obviously, because y'all now put this one down, your imaginations are probably expanding on the universe, and you're thinking, oh, what about a spinoff story just about Samba's character, this and that? That would make a good comic book, or this and that, like an anime.
Armadillos.
And this and that. Like, yeah, let's bring in the armadillos. Geekscape is obviously what I want y'all to do is I want y'all to go and find Otter Space on whatever podcast app you're using right now to listen to my voice, and share it with your friends, especially share it with your friends and families. Again, like Andy said, you don't have to be a kid to enjoy it. This is made for people our age, internally and externally. We're two different ages, but both those ages,
absolutely,
they'll both enjoy it. So go out and check out Otter Space and Geekscape. If you're in LA, let's plug it one more time. Benj and I are going to be on the stage at El Capitan this Saturday talking about Homeward Bound. Or
actually, that's the first time I met Benj watching Homeward Bound as a kid in Ethiopia it was not a original VHS tape. Let me put it that way. It was
a pirates. You've been a pirate.
I think somebody stood up and went to the bathroom after watching the movie. Yeah. But I remember watching Homeward Bound in Ethiopia on a tape that was not an original VHS tape, and that's when I first met Benj.
Samba, you're being for real. That's amazing.
You've never told me that, Samba. You know, that's awesome. That's amazing.
No, have you met Neil Gaiman too and didn't want to tell me?
At the party. He was at the party.
What's great is Benj is texting me about the putting together of this 30th anniversary screening, and I'm really excited about it. Some of the people you're telling me, similar to Samba, who have been fans of this movie that you're discovering are fans, some pretty amazing names. And I don't know if you want to release them here, but some of them are great. Now, Samba being one of them. Do you want to talk about it here? Maybe we can use them later on.
We can talk about it here. I mean, Jonathan Majors is a big fan of the movie. Kang the Conqueror. He said so online, which is wonderful. It's wonderful to hear that the film to this day still affects people from when they were kids, you know, that they have really fond memories of the film. It's going to be great night on Saturday. I hope you all can come. Tickets are available now on the El Capitan website, Fandango, 7 p.m. screening.
And we outsold Avatar too. Maybe.
True story.
Maybe.
Well, maybe. I'll tell you this. They put that Avatar 2 on that screen all week, and then they pulled it off just to show a little movie called Homeward Bound. So what does that tell you, Geekscapists? What does that tell you, all right? All right.
And Avatar
2 is tight, by the way. Loved it.
If you go, though, there's going to be 1,000 Angelinos all sharing a really ugly good cry, in that right. Homeward Bound. You cannot cry during Homeward Bound.
It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, we've got some surprises in store, Jonathan. We'll be at the panel.
I'm working on my Ouija skills.
You know, what's going to be amazing, we're going to have the original animal trainers there, which is really cool to talk about how they captured this movie in a time before any CGI. There's no effects in the movie. It's all shot natural. One of the most amazing things on this film that you'll hear about at screening a little more from the filmmakers is when we were shooting the film, we wrapped out all the humans, we wrapped out all the people, and then the filmmakers, there's about 20 of them, and the animals all went into the middle of the Oregon wilderness on horseback, loading all the cameras in the film way off the grid. This is before cell phones, and went out there for 2 weeks and shot this incredible footage with these animals. So what you're seeing is real. The interactions between the animals is real. The voices coming from their heads is real.
But the kids are CGI.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I was in a mocap suit.
Early Pixar. All right, let's wrap up because I know Samba's got to go. Y'all got to go. And Geekscapists, maybe one day people will be talking with the same reverence for Outer Space, the film, along with how they speak about Homeward Bound. But the only way to do it is if y'all go out there and download it and share it with your friends and get the word out there. Guys, loved having y'all on Geekscape. Loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it, Ben. It was a long time coming, Benj. Yeah.
Thank you,
Ben. It was a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Best place to find Outer Space. Is there a website?
There is. There's what there is. There's otterspacepodcast.com. But your best option is just searching for Spotify, iTunes, the usual. You know, it's there. So
perfect. Geekscape, in order to find us, just search for Geekscape. You'll find us. We're going to be back next week. We'll be talking some heavy comics next week. So if you're a big comic book fan, check it out. If you're not a big comic book fan, you know the conversations are fun, and we'll probably end up talking about movies and TV and all that other stuff we talk about too. So share it with your friends. Leave us a 5-star review and a couple words there, and that really helps us out. And you'll hear from us next week. Geekscape forever. Don't hate, create, over and out. Thanks, guys.
Peace, everybody.
See ya.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.